Tonight's the night. I've been planning this for weeks, meticulously. Nights like this, where the moon is bright and the air is at its most humid, is when I work at my best. Yes, tonight is the night my hunger gets satiated. Everything is falling into place. The equipment is all ready. I've gone over the plan twice. There's just one piece missing. Ah, and here he is now. The next victim, I mean guest.
Hey Dan, I'm ready for our next episode of Pilot Views. Is this where I sit? Hey Dan, what's with all the plastic? What's with the syringe? Oi!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Casting Pilot Views. And I think before I introduce him, I just need to stress no Justin Hensons were harmed in the making of the opening skit. Justin, can you just confirm that?
You got me, Dan. Oh, unexpected, but I am perfectly fine.
And just want to say hi, Antonio. Right.
Just for Antonio. I love this.
Right. So, Justin, we have been planning this for a while, haven't we? Because we meant to do it at time recording. We were going to do it a few weeks ago. But even though we call this Pilot Views, I think we both got sucked into watching the complete series of Dexter, right?
Yeah, I mean, this one was a big one. I think this is our biggest one so far. I mean, Cheers was a big load, but I had an excuse because I had COVID, so I can watch and binge the whole thing. But this one is a lot deeper, and it's so hard to not just watch a couple episodes to cover Dexter. It sucks you in, and you have to watch it from season one to the finale. So this one is going to be an exciting one. I can't wait for this talk.
Yeah, me too. And so just to call out right now, we are obviously going to talk spoilers for Dexter, and we're going to touch on all seasons. So we are going to obviously talk about the first and the pilot, but we are going to touch all 8 seasons. You're probably going to go into Dexter New Blood, which I've not seen yet. So there'll be some spoilers for that. So yes, so just to say that Dexter was based on a series of books. It ran between 2006-2013 for 8 seasons and 96 episodes. And of course, we had at the end of last year a series of Dexter New Blood, which I believe at the moment there's no plans for a second season. And the show received 52 awards, I think, including 4 Emmy Awards and 2 Golden Globe Awards. So my first question for you, because this is going to go all over the place, is what is your experience with Dexter? I mean, in terms of, so this wasn't the first time you watched it, right?
No, this was kind of the second run through. I started Dexter, I think, when it was in its 5th, 6th season. A lot of talk around it, and with me, it's hard for me to just sit and watch a TV show. I'm very particular about what I watch on TV, and especially ones that I have to wait week over week. So I know with Lost, that was a big one for me, where that one was torturous, where I had to wait and anticipate the next episode. I don't have the patience. So with this one, I ended up watching the first season after everybody telling me, this is going to be a Justin TV show. You need to watch this. And they were right, because I sat on my ass and I watched this thing all the way to the final episode, I think, of the 5th season. And it drove me nuts, because I went into that, I have to wait. And I was obsessed with this show. And it's one of those on my short list of TV shows that I can really just deep dive in and just really talk about. And it's just really memorable, mainly because of how fantastically written the characters are and the taboo-ness of vengeance when it comes to the topic and who we want to root for. So there's a lot of aspects that just make this almost a TV show that I can just really talk about for hours on end. Obviously, we're not going to have a 4-hour show about Dexter today on Pilot Views, but I think this is just a TV show that just is close to my heart because of just how many elements work in this show.
I couldn't agree more with you. For me, I think it's similar. I think I got into it around the 5th season originally. And again, it was people were telling me bits and pieces. So again, you know, spoilers, obviously, we called it out, but the scene about you know, him metaphorically being born in blood and the toddler, you know, that I was told about that scene. And the fact that we've got a rogue police, I know he's not a police officer, he's a blood spatter analyst, but that's been done so many times. But as you said, I think most of the seasons are fairly compelling viewing in how it's written. Another thing I love is that they're 12 episode seasons, so it's not overly long. You know, it's not a 22 episode season. And there'll be things that will come up in our conversation that, yeah, I just think there are so many really well done stories. I'd actually forgotten how, I mean, I want to say graphic, that might sound extreme, but I've forgotten how graphic, how gory it can actually be and how dark it can be.
Yeah, I mean, I think what really brought me into this show is the opening credits, where it is the most gruesome, just not intentionally gruesome, but just the grotesqueness and the interesting,
unsettling
sounds and visuals that you get. And it is pretty graphic. I mean, when you take the mere topic, it's hard to have this topic without adding the gruesomeness to it, where we see body parts being chopped off. We see countless bodies throughout the seasons, and just the aspect of murder. There's no way that this could have been on just plain TV. This had to be picked up by a cable network to actually show. I mean, it is impossible to take these adaptions from the books and really make it, I want to say, mainstream or suitable for all audiences, because it wouldn't do it justice. To show the brutality of why Dexter is doing this, you have to have a brutal visual as well. So, and I think that's what really makes this captivating, is not necessarily focusing on the gruesomeness of it, but the intent of why we're seeing this on screen. And I think this is what really separates Dexter from a lot of TV shows that we get that really go for the shock factor, because there is intent behind it, and it leaves it up to the audience to decide whether that's just or is it morally unjust. But the gruesomeness to it is actually something that really pulls in addition to the intent of what we see on screen. So that's what I really do appreciate it. It never throws in body parts. It never throws in things that feel unnecessary. And we see that, again, in a lot of shows and a lot of movies that just throw it in just to throw it in, just to get a reaction. We don't see that here, because it's still a character-driven story.
Yeah, and I've got a question for you on that later in the episode. I agree that I think the acts he does as well, in my mind, have to be fairly graphic, because for some people there will be a blur around, do you root for him or not as a character? But before we start dissecting Dexter, we're going to have a commercial break, and you're going to hear from Joey and Tim over at Two Blokes from Blighty.
Hi, I'm a bloke.
And I'm another bloke.
And we are from Blighty. My name is Joey. I'm joined by my co-host Tim.
Hi.
Where every single Wednesday we come at you through the Game Club Pod podcast feed with our show, Two Blokes from Blighty. I tried to think about the kind of topics that we talk about on Two Blokes from Blighty. Tim, what's your favourite topic that we've ever spoken about across our three seasons?
The fiasco of me shaving my head.
Mine is the fiasco of you shitting on a toilet seat. If those sound like things you want to hear about, join us every Wednesday by searching Game Club Pod in your podcast provider.
Just makes my life sound a little bit tragic, really, doesn't it?
Would you listen to that show, Tim?
I would.
I don't think I would.
No.
Right, we are back. So, a quick summary in case people haven't seen it. And if you haven't, as I said, spoilers. So, Dexter is about a character called Dexter who works for the Miami Metro Police Department as a blood spatter analyst. It's just he's got a secret. And the secret is he's basically a serial killer, isn't he? And he's got a code that was taught by his stepfather. I found the code online, the instructions, but yeah, he basically only goes after criminals. He's got to satiate that hunger of the killing, but it gets channeled into taking out serial killers. So, I mean, do you just want to give a little background on Dexter as a kid growing up to kind of what that little bit of backstory is around him?
Yeah, I mean, Dexter was born in a pool of blood. So he had witnessed his mother get chopped up, I believe it was with a chainsaw. And what we find in kind of the beginning season is he had a brother there with him alongside this murder. So he grew up with a brutal, brutal murder that really unleashed his inner demon, or his darkness, his little darkness, I think they refer it to. And this is what grew inside to get that thirst of what a child really sees as normality, what a child really sees as justified. I think justified is the key word when we go into how he identifies on what he does. Because when you see that at a young age, that's what really builds the morality of Dexter. But we take our Harry character that really guides him into controlling it. So when we go through the seasons, we get a slippery slope of what is right and what is immoral. And it's all immoral. Any killing's immoral, but Dexter has to find a middle ground with it throughout the seasons. But growing up, he had to have this mentor to really guide him through controlling his inner demon, to really kind of grow into the adult that he is now, from where he was as a kid, where he witnessed something that any child would be absolutely traumatized by.
Yes, and his father, I said his stepfather, so it then transpires actually that, so we think he's adopted or taken in, but it's not. His father actually, or Harry, his stepfather, rescues him from this container, just takes him away, doesn't he? Plucks him away. And his father is a policeman in the Miami Metro. And then to make matters worse, in the modern day, his sister, or his stepsister, is also a police officer, isn't she? I think in the first episode, she starts in the vice department, but she quickly works her way up. It's those little intricate layers of not only is he involved in law enforcement, but his father and his sister are all in law. So the fact that he's in a serial killer, and that actually is what takes up a number of the season's plots. I actually found a code, because if you watch the show, they keep talking about Harry's code. So I don't know if you've actually seen the bullet points for the code or not.
No, when you brought that up, I was curious about it. So yeah, what are the codes?
What I found is, and has to be said that he does break a lot of these over time in the seasons. Number one is don't get caught. Never kill an innocent. Targets must be killers who have evaded the justice system. So victims must be killers who the police are unable to catch or convict. Killing must serve a purpose, otherwise it's just plain murder. Blend in socially, maintain appearances. Fake emotions and normality. Control urges to kill and channel them. Be prepared, leave no traces or evidence. Never make a scene, stay calm and collected. Don't make things personal because it clouds judgment. Don't get emotionally involved, and no preemptive killing. So I think those last few we know he tends to break in later seasons. But yeah, so that is Harry's code. So that is ultimately what makes Dexter, Dexter.
You see, now those rules, all I had to worry about as a kid is do my homework and don't go out past 9 o'clock. So, I mean, that's a long laundry list for a kid to handle. But here's the thing with this is, as you're speaking to these codes, it's reminding me of a lot that happens throughout the seasons. We, especially when the fitting in aspect, because as you said, he becomes part of the police department, his sister, his whole family is part of that. And as we see throughout the seasons, he does get romantically involved and he does have friendships, but all of these relationships end with him trying to find a connection to either what romantic relationship he's in, what friendship he's in. All these characters that interact with Dexter end up almost being killers themselves, or have subdued their tendencies and came back. He finds a way to kind of relate back to these characters to find that normality. He wants that human connection. And it always ends badly. But when you go through these rules, he breaks them almost every season. There's a new rule that he kind of just breaks. And he does it to the extreme where it ends up badly for the other supporting characters. So as you're going through this, I think it's brilliant because these rules are kind of set forth Dexter to intentionally break it, to move this story along and to build that drama in this. And as when you read it, it's just kind of mind-blowing to me right now that I'm going to word vomit throughout this show of things that I'm going to pinpoint that we're going to talk about.
And I think he's breaking these rules as it goes on, because he's actually deviating away from the one key thing, and that is he almost starts believing he can have a normal life. And that is the biggest issue, the biggest problem he ends up having.
It's human nature. We all want that connection. And when you're even surrounded around trying to do the right thing and take vengeance and killing the killers, there's no element in people that just say, that's all I can do. He needs that relationship. He needs that relatability. And we see it kind of in the middle seasons where he sees just the ounce of a connection, not necessarily in a romantic relationship, but in a friendship as well. He goes almost all in. And that's almost a piece where you really have a likability to Dexter. And that's where I think a lot of viewers really connected with him, is not the killings. If you're connecting to the killings, then there's something wrong with you. But it's that relationship piece, that of that want to be part of that relationship. And I think that's what really made Dexter a likable character in this, is he, and on the surface, he is human. And on the inner surface, he really does want a friendship. He really does want normality, but he has this impulsive, traumatic craze that he just needs to fulfill. And that's kind of almost a tragic piece of Dexter, right? That we'll see towards the end of the series.
And just to say, yeah, Michael C. Hall, who plays Dexter, plays him brilliantly, because it is a real Jekyll and Hyde. When he's daytime Dexter, he's a really likable character. Evening Dexter, though, that's a whole other kettle of fish. Now, I want to talk about the pilot briefly. So it's going to be cheating, because we're not going to focus too much on the pilot, because I think this is just too good a show to focus solely on that. I think the pilot is great at setting the stall. I mean, the one thing is it doesn't have the opening credits, or at least over here in the UK, it didn't have the normal opening credits, which I think, like you said, are so chillingly excellent. Like you said, it's all full of very metaphorical killing things, like there's a blood orange that gets squeezed. He puts a t-shirt over his head and it looks like when he's got the plastic over. Anyway, it's a great, great opening sequence that's not there. In that episode, he is chasing a pastor, isn't he, who's been abusing and murdering young boys. And that's his victim in that one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the first one is a good introduction, where we get introduced to kind of almost the hook where it comes to Dexter's brother, the ice truck killer, right? And I think this one is a more simplistic killer, where it takes kind of the foundation and the behaviors of what we would see from a serial killer, only adds a little bit of hook or spice to it by adding stakes. And that stakes is a relationship with Dexter. So, and I think that's what really draws people in. And you mentioned the opening credits on it. And just, I want to say it is, every time I see those credits of him chewing the meat, I want to vomit, because that is the worst sound in the world, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. No, I was just going to say, yeah, but the episode itself starts off with him chasing that pastor. And I think that is really good at showing that he is almost on edge. He's almost like an addict who has to get that fix. When you first see him, he's quite agitated, and then he murders him. And then, as per the scene, so basically every episode, he sets up a kill room, methodically covers everything in plastic, murders a person, dismembers them, and then goes on a boat and chucks it in the ocean. But the pilot episode does a great thing of showing you that darkness, that hunger to kill, and then the next day, when after he's dumped it, almost like he's relieved, he's smiling, he's like the happiest person in the world. So that already just shows in that first episode the desire and the transformation, I think, that he goes through after every kill.
And I think what really, when it comes to Michael C. Hall in the pilot episode, the pilot, this is where that character and the actor is really figuring out their character motivation, and they're really trying to figure out this character. And I think this is the perfect character to have a pilot episode with, where he's unsure of himself. He's unsure of who he's trying to portray. And it almost acts brilliantly because it works for this character. He's trying to figure out this character, and we're trying to figure out along with him. And as we see him grow, especially in the first season, we see that growth from him. It's almost like we're seeing the birth of the serial killer at this point, even though he's already put a foundation in who he is. But he's still awkwardly going through the social aspects of it, the killings, even the first killing that he does really does have kind of an awkwardness to it.
Yeah.
So we're being introduced to this. And I think that normality that he tries to convince us from really makes us kind of want to see what he does next. And we do see a nice crescendo in character development through the seasons. But this one, I think when it comes to Michael C. Hall, he does a brilliant job on just not knowing what the character is. And I think that is the perfect placement for how to start this character. And I really enjoyed where his character was in the first season. If you went in and watched the first season, the last season, and just see the growth, you'll see that with any TV show, but it's extra special here because of the character that is written and the way that Michael C. Hall kind of has no idea where this character is going to go. And he's learning as he goes, and we can see that progression. And we see that even in the first two or three episodes.
The other character I would say for me that changes the most is Deb. So we meet her in the pilot and she's on the vice squad, but she's very, it's almost like she is intentionally very gangly, very young, very green in terms of almost like the policing, isn't she? So then when you see her progression over the years, I mean, the one thing I do want to say, and me and my wife, we were watching this because she got hooked on this as well. The actress, what's her name? Jennifer Carpenter, isn't it? The amount of crying she does throughout 8 seasons of Dexter is incredible, is phenomenal. She wins an award. If you need an actress who can cry and really show that inner pain, she's your person, right?
She does a fantastic job, absolutely. It reminds me of acting school where you're just being shouted, do this emotion, do this emotion. And she can do it on cue and she does it brilliantly. And you talk about her in the pilot episode where she's kind of green, but just the body language. I remember I watched a scene over a couple times after before the show, and it's her walking through the police department when she's gangly, just the way she walks. There's no confidence to it. She's stiff. She's really just trying to awkwardly fit in, just like Dexter is. And it's a great baseline to how events are going to make her grow. But it's just the body language that Carpenter really puts into this role that really stands out to me. Not to say that her verbal performance isn't there, but to me, it takes two pieces of it with the body language and the actual verbal performance. She nails it both. Between the body language and her dialogue, it just really works in unison here to really take this character to the next level. Because if you go out in public, me, I'm a people watcher. Like, I can't pay attention to one thing. So I'm constantly looking around. And if I were to see this person in public, there you can read what she's doing without this character speaking any words. You can sense her discomfort. You can sense her social awkwardness and her lack of confidence. And that says a lot. If you can take all the dialogue from this character, take it out, you would still be able to kind of get a read on what Deb or who Deb is and where she fits into this storyline. I think that's a tremendous talent from an actress.
And if we're talking about her verbal performance, she is extremely foul-mouthed as well, isn't she? And
yes.
But it is in a comedy way. She does that brilliantly. And the other thing you get from her is that she's extremely competitive. It's always like she was trying to impress her dad. And I think she thinks, you know, you get the snippets as the seasons go on that he showed all his attention to Dexter. Well, we know why now as the viewer, but she doesn't. She felt like she was always having to compete for her dad's attention. That's why I think she wanted to be a detective, getting the police, be a detective, and she ultimately ends up lieutenant, doesn't she?
Yeah, and it's the sibling rivalry almost, where, you know, Harry had a boy, and you can connect that to a father and son, where the daughter kind of feels on the back burner because they're doing manly things, and there's no explanation to it. And when it comes to the Harry character, this is where I think it faltered a little bit, is we don't learn too much about him. We learn about his kind of inner demons later in the seasons, but we don't really learn too much about the Harry-Deb relationship on why she kind of feels that way other than what she's verbalizing. So to me, that kind of faltered a little bit in the seasons that I wanted a little bit more. But you're right. So there is a subtle jealousy there, but in no way does it really take away from the Dexter Deb relationship, because that is still strong, because she sees the nice guy that Dexter portrays. And if he can convince that to another family member that knows him the most, that's what really puts a question mark on how the story progresses and how people are going to view him. And that's a huge exclamation point on who the Dexter character is. If we're constantly being reminded that this is a guy that has hidden this dark secret from even the closest person next to him, the person that knows him the most. And they really do take advantage of that in the, especially the first few seasons.
Yeah. And it is important to say, as you said, there's an incredible bond between them. They do love each other. And I think he says in the pilot something like, if I know what love is, I feel it for her. She's the only person. Two things I do want to call out as well about the pilot and the first episode before we can then go wider is one, the whole, as you said, he portrays the awkwardness really well in the first season. So he talks about himself almost like he is a robot when it comes to the emotional side of things. And he gets set up in a romantic involvement. It's for his sister. And when you look at it initially, it's not a nice thing in the sense of that she was a victim of abuse, wasn't it? It's Julie Benz, isn't it? Rita. And so he's with her because he says she's as damaged as he is. But between them two, the awkwardness in their first few encounters is just incredible, isn't it? And it's so well acted between the two of them and so sweet and funny at the same time.
It really is. And the one thing that really takes you back is when you get to the last half of the seasons, or the last season, I would say, that's where you're really reminded of this relationship from the get-go. And you get reminded of these connections. I'm going to give very little credit to the finale, but I will give it credit to really having us think about the previous interactions that the characters had, because that's the only thing we really have to go off of, because the finale sucked. But but I think that is a huge point on your part. So I think this relationship, there's something that's really poetic about it.
Again, going back to earlier, that relationship, I think, is one of his downfalls ultimately. There's two or three relationships he's had where he's got what he would call a friend, and we'll come into it because they often feature as villains. But Rita is the one person, I think, and she's got two kids, hasn't she? Cody and Asta, who are basically, he ends up adoring as well, doesn't he? He does love those kids and is fiercely protective of them. And then he ends up having his own kid who, he is an extremely good father, which sounds strange to be a serial killer. But the only other thing, you kind of mentioned it, the big bad of this season is the ice truck killer, who I think you said turns out to be Dexter's brother. Dexter, for a lot of the season, or at least the first few episodes, loves it because this killer, he doesn't know it's his brother at the time, but is playing a game with him, isn't he? Leaving like little doll parts in his apartment, and he treats it as a game, almost like a cat and mouse, and he loves it, doesn't he?
He loves it because there's a connection to it. He loves it because there's multiple things that he can relate to with this. And it's one of the first times he gets to really show his inner demon to the viewer as well. But this is one that really is, I want to use it again, poetic, because you have his brother, the ice truck killer. Then you have Deb that potentially was on that table that Dexter had the opportunity to kill. You have two siblings here. And instead of finding somebody that he relates to, he ends up saving Deb. So there's a lot of morality choices here that he knows deep down what's right. And almost, I want to say, like competition. He relates to it, but this is competition. He sees the danger in this, but he has proven support from his sister. So I think there is almost a Shakespearean piece to this where it really does give a highlight to something more that you can really kind of deep dive into. And you can't really do that with an hour-long show, especially with so much. I kind of wish this pilot would have been stretched into a couple different episodes to really get into these characters, because there's something really deep here that really deserved a little bit more from just an hour-long episode.
And if you think about it, so I'm happy now for, if we branch the conversation out, it's shown from this season alone, because obviously we've got in the pilot the pastor right at the beginning. We've got the ice truck killer throughout. And obviously every episode, or at least every other episode, there's another villain he takes out. He is ultimately impeding the police, right? For his own, to satiate his own hunger to kill. he is ultimately subverting police investigations and ultimately betraying his colleagues, right?
And I think that's what I feel the worst about. Like the killings, yeah, sure. You know, I don't feel bad about that. They're criminals. But to me, with each and every time he almost evades his friends or he has to keep this secret from his coworkers that have some really great built relationships through the seasons, that's what really hurt me to an extent is I didn't want Dexter to be caught mainly because I didn't want these relationships to end. I didn't want a lot of these characters to think badly of him because it would hurt those characters. And after watching, we'll get into it, I'm sure later, but New Blood, you really zero in on why and how important these supporting characters are. And in general, how important a good supporting cast is to the main character, because Dexter by himself doesn't really drive. We like him. We like his intent to an extent, but the supporting characters is what really hits me hard when we get through the rest of the seasons, because I ended up caring more about the outcome of the supporting cast than I did what's going to happen to Dexter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because a number of times he's lying to them, getting them into trouble. And in a couple of occasions, they don't meet a good end ultimately because of him. Not directly, but we will go on to that. So what I thought I wanted to do was take you through the characters. If we focus, there is a majority of them throughout the season. There's just one key one that will be missing, which I'll add in. But if we go through the characters and just talk about them briefly, then I've got the list of the big bads throughout the season. And I know there's one that whenever you say Dexter to someone, there's a favorite. And I think we know which one ours is, right?
100%. And yeah. I'll be shocked if you say something different, but yeah, but you go, you start, I'm not going to get ahead of it. You start with the characters.
Tell what, with the characters, let's do some of the side characters first. Oh, and sorry. And as you said, I want to say, yeah, absolutely. I think from the get go, when I'm watching Dexter, I'm thinking, I don't want the other characters to be hurt because you like them, but you know, this story can't end well.
100%.
Right. Let's start with David Zayas as Angel Batista. For me, the only other character, I think, who doesn't change much in terms of character throughout the season, but he's a very cuddly character, he's a good police officer, but also wants to be a good friend to everyone. So what's your view on Batista?
Batista, hands down, is my favorite character of Dexter, because he is, next to Dexter, he is the most damaged throughout the entire series. He goes through divorces. He wants that acceptance. He wants to be loved. We see that in a consistency with this character versus, say, Deb, that really we see kind of the pain in the back half, even though she gets physically hurt almost in every season. But internally, this is a character, like you said, is cuddly. He's likable. He is that tough cop, but you want to root for him, and you can see his inner hurt with every season, and he just really is there for the rest of the cast. He's really there to support. He's really there to really be there for his peers. So there's everything about this character I just love, and he cannot be beat in my eyes and versus any other character except for one villain.
Yeah. So there's an order for the characters I'm doing. There's a reason, and I'll say that as we get through it. So the next one I want to jump to is C.S. Lee, who plays Vince Masuka. Now, again, another one who kind of doesn't change, but that's probably a bad thing, right? In the sense of, so he is almost like the light relief as well, isn't he? The comic relief. Very, when you look back at it now, and it was even intentional then, very sexist after all the young ladies, but again is clearly very good at what he does, and sometimes does get into slightly, without him knowing, conflict with Dexter. So yeah, let's talk about Masuka.
I have to do this, the Masuka laugh, the so the comedy relief character. I mean, any forensic expert that goes to a crime scene with a decapitated head and says, That's some nice head. I mean, any...
yes, <yeah. laughs> Sorry, he's always with the one-liner, the... What's the word? I want to say disrespectful. Innuendos, but not... Disrespectful isn't the word I was thinking, but like you said, yeah, looks at a murder scene and almost thinks nothing of it. Oh, and he's always the one that's got to come up with a name for the serial killer, isn't he? A fun name.
Yeah, I mean, he is a comic relief, and we kind of see, I think as the show matured, they kind of took a lot of that away. I don't know if that was audience reaction or whatever it may be, but I kind of miss that. But we see that heavily in the first few seasons, and you kind of just chuckle of relief when you see him on screen, because you know it's coming. There's only one reason you'll see him on screen, and that's to give one of those one-liners or to witness something to move the story along. But it's usually just for that comic relief. And I think he's an extremely likable guy just because he's there to tell jokes.
Yeah, and he is, not him personally, but there's a storyline we'll come on to that annoys me about the last season that it doesn't get expanded on. And talk about the last season, I told you we're going to jump about. I remember coming into this saying to my wife, the last season is awful, at least the finale is. Now, looking back at it, I think the last season actually is a fairly solid season. It's just that last episode. And if you're looking at IMDb, all the episodes are like 8.5, 8.5, 9, 8.5. Then the finale is 4.5 or something like that. And I think that's accurate, right?
Yeah, like I have no problem with the 8th season. I think it's well done. What was a letdown was the last episode. Because as I talked earlier, we talked earlier, the supporting cast is fantastic. And there was no real justice. It was rushed. They were trying to check boxes, and there was no justice for our characters, and there was no real resolve. I think the creators of this just got so obsessed that everybody liked Dexter, his name's on the TV show, we're going to ensure that he has a proper exit, but we forget about justice to what made this show really special, which is a supporting cast.
Yeah, we will hit that finale. Let's carry on with the characters for now. James Remar, who plays Harry. Now, for me, he's in almost every episode, but he's a bit part in a sense of he is Dexter's subconscious, isn't it? He's who he talks to. I think he's brilliant in it. He's just got that look. He's got a very almost like loving tone to his son. And I think he portrays that he knows he's done something wrong, even though it's Dexter's subconscious. But you get the feeling that the way he talks to him is like, Dexter knew that he wasn't happy to do that.
Absolutely. And you could almost feel that he could have recorded his lines for all the seasons like in 2 days, because it's at the same tone. It's at the same intent. He has that performance that just acts as the conscious, and he knows that. He never steers away from his character. And it's refreshing, but at the same time, there's really nothing that really escalates it. It's kind of just a conversation between Dexter and him, and there's really nothing that we see different in the seasons. His conscience stays the same, which I would expect it to steer off course a little bit, to kind of go with the evolution of Dexter and that conversation piece being a little bit different. So to me, I had a little bit of a problem with the Harry character in the last seasons, but you know what? I'll give credit to the performance being very consistent. I'll give it that.
Now, this set of characters, the reason I've kept them last is because they all get killed off, ultimately, over the season. So we're going to start with Eric King, who plays James Doakes. Now, he gets killed off in season 2. And part of it is because another thing they do well is tease the revelation and the capture and the unveiling of Dexter almost throughout each season as the killer, right? And they never quite do it. Now, James Doakes is the only person that almost got close. Now, I liked him, but he plays that, you know, he's out for Dexter, and it feels a little bit over the top in the portrayal. But I did like him as a character. And obviously he gets killed inadvertently, not by Dexter, but there was only ever going to be one ending for him. So again, it feels a shame and bad that Dexter gets him killed ultimately. But because it's early on, you almost forget about it as the later seasons go on. But yeah, what about Doakes?
It's like he wandered onto the wrong set. I think he was supposed to be for Law and Order, or like he is over the top with it. And to me, he wasn't a likable character. And I can almost say that maybe it wasn't a plan to have him killed, but with given his performance and his likability, like there is nothing with this character I was rooting for. And it's nothing because of Dexter or the supporting cast. It's because I just didn't like him. And the character isn't really given enough. I don't know if the intent was to make him so unlikable, but we just have this guy chasing Dexter. And the climax to him, his end, was a brilliant one. So I think the setup for this character on what they did with it, I think was brilliant. But this character I absolutely hated just because it is so over the top and it didn't really match any other character. If it was me, I would think it was so over the top that he might be the killer. It's like a whodunit and this guy's pretending to not do it, but he's just, I don't know, he's just way over the top. I didn't like him.
Yeah, but he is, yeah, very much almost like not a comedy character, but he's almost cartoonish compared to the other actors. But again, he's not given anything to work with, and only in it 2 seasons, there wasn't much he could do, I guess. Let's look at Luna Lauren Velez now, who's Maria La Guerta. She gets killed off in 7, and she gets killed by Deb, right? Which was a sucker punch as well, when you're watching it for the first time.
This character I liked, but I don't know. She did Batista dirty, so I didn't like the divorce with this character because I thought that was cute in the seasons. So just for the fact she divorced Batista just made me not like her. But at the same time, she got close to the Dexter character, and she did it in a manner that wasn't over the top, and she did it in a manner that really involved other characters. And especially with the writers, they involved the relationship between Batista and her to really have a question mark over this character on what she's going to do next. So I think this one, over 7 seasons, did have a lot to work with. And I think they executed that appropriately. But when it comes to her demise, I didn't really feel anything for her because I think that happened too quick. I think the main intent was to give Deb her moment, not give Lagosta her moment, which was unfortunate because she was an interesting character through the seasons, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. The sucker punch moment is for Deb because it ruins Deb for the first half of 8, right? Because of what she's had to do for her brother. So really quickly, James Doakes always suspected Dexter of being the serial killer. He gets close to finding out the truth. Inadvertently gets killed by another 2 villain, Lila, who we'll come on to. Then in later seasons, La Guerta starts picking up the case because various things, she starts suspecting Dexter. At this point, Deb already knows, and that's the other reveal we'll talk about. Deb knows what Dexter's done, and La Guerta catches Dexter, and I think, that's it. And then Deb shoots her, doesn't she, La Guerta, to keep her brother's secret. So she's had to not only live with the fact that she knows her brother is a killer, but she's then had to kill a friend, colleague, and her boss, ultimately, isn't it? The only other thing I would say about La Guerta is I found her a strange character in the way she flip-flops. So she came across as really nice and really helpful. And then a number of times she was almost like the one who was trying to double-cross the characters like Deb. Like in the 1st season, you get the impression that she fancied Dexter, and then that quickly went nowhere.
Yeah, and you have to bounce around because, you know, it is almost a political environment to an extent. So there's a lot of politics that they don't go over in this setting where you want to get promoted, you want to get ahead. You have a lot of eyes on the work that you're doing. You have this investigation, you have all these murders. So she has to flip-flop to kind of balance the supporting characters and her job. And I think when it comes to them balancing it, I think they did an okay job, but I think they could have added more to this character. And I think this character deserved more to give that viewer the more, much more interpretation of what her intent was or who she's supporting. The investigation when she goes into Dexter, to me, felt a little limp because I think they could have really added more interactions between her and Dexter to really build that tension.
Yeah.
Other than her working in the background against Dexter. So, but in terms of it, I think it was a good catapult to where the next season was going to go. And again, it was a good cliffhanger with the Deb being or shooting and choosing, because again, when we talk about the poeticness of it, it almost puts us back to the pilot where Dexter had to make that choice between Deb and his brother, and now Deb is put in that position of her brother or going to jail or moving on. So I think to me, that was a good poetic cliffhanger going into what's going to close up the entire series.
Yeah. So the murder of La Guerta, the murder of Rita, which I'll talk about Rita last, again, comes from, I think, undoubtedly mistakes on Dexter's part. I'll leave Rita last because that's going to lead into a villain. I mean, is there anything else about Jennifer Carpenter as Deb and Michael C. Hall? I mean, again, I think they're perfect. I really, really like Deb. I think Jennifer Carpenter is brilliant in this. Interestingly, that they did actually get married and divorced during the run of the show, didn't they? And incredibly, that what they then carried on for another few seasons, sort of without issue, isn't it?
I didn't know that until I was researching the show, and you really can't tell in the show to an extent that that happened. I was waiting for the divorce to show in the episodes, and that's where I really thought Deb was going to shoot Michael C. Hall in the finale. But yeah, I mean, the Deb character is great. The one thing, too, and I hope this leads into our favorite character, is that Michael C. Hall, during season 4, was diagnosed with cancer. And in season 5, he was battling cancer, too. So there is a lot of challenges in these two seasons. And I don't know if a lot of this emotional struggle from Michael C. Hall contributed to some fantastic performances and some of the best seasons that this show had. But there was a lot going on between the cancer diagnosis and then the divorce. So this was 8 seasons of almost an emotional roller coaster for two of our main characters. And whether or not it's impossible and selfish for me to say that didn't contribute to a lot of these fantastic performances, because it had to. These talents really do put their all into their work. And again, I'm glad that we got to see some emotional performances in an unfortunate manner in their personal lives. But I think it does add a lot to the relationship, especially with Michael C. Hall and Carpenter.
Yeah, the brilliant performances throughout all those turmoil for him and her. I'll finish with Julie Benz for characters. Rita, brilliant, again, evolution for her as well, as this timid, obviously damaged person from previous relationships through to just being such a lovely character and a good person for Dexter through to her untimely demise. And I'd forgotten, and literally just before the scene happened, it came flooding back. And even now, when I rewatched it, that scene, the final scene of her, got me. It got me good. So yeah, let's talk Rita.
It's funny you say that, because I remember the first time watching the season finale to season 4, and that, talk about a gut punch, because didn't see that coming. Because again, the writers do something different here, where we usually end with the murder of the serial killer and that's it. This one just gets you right in the gut, where we see the death of Rita as a one final gotcha from one of the best killers of Dexter, which is the Trinity Killer, played by John Lithgow, which in his, one of his best, I would say, TV performances. Rita is such a great character. She's sweet. She contradicts Dexter to an extent, but she is just so sweet and likable. And that's what made it an even bigger sucker punch, seeing that final shot.
It was devastating. I'm going to say that, because ultimately, it's a kind of a circle, because we'll talk about it. As you mentioned, Trinity Killer, John Lithgow, brilliant. Dexter had a chance earlier in the season to kill him, didn't. So that's come back full circle. But also it's because of Rita that Dexter became, quote, normal, started having normal feelings. And I think it's affected him in later seasons with some of the mistakes. I think she was the person that not turned him around, because he was still a killer and he was till season 8, but made him feel something other than emptiness.
Yeah, and as we pinpoint different aspects, if we look at all these relationships that Dexter's in romantically, each time he wants an out, it's almost like an excuse to change. We see in, I think, season 3, I can't remember, where he goes to Neurotics Anonymous and he calls a sponsor before he kills to get him to stop. These women in his life, he's finding reasons to not. And then we're introduced to Rita with kids. And it's almost as that therapy, because if we take Dexter back, and they give some very good examples in season 4 of him on his traumatic childhood, on his attachment to kids. We see the Trinity Killer have a very oddball, almost opposite feeling towards kids in this one. And that's what he almost connects it to, where he wants to read this killer that really contradicts his values of kids on how they are when they grow up, how they handle traumatic events. So there's an intrigue with Dexter, with the John Lithgow character, on how he proceeds. So there's, when he hesitates to kill John Lithgow, there's a lot we can really kind of deep dive into his head to really kind of give an interpretation of why he stopped, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I've mentioned mistakes. Like I said, the killers in season 6, Travis Marshall, if he'd have killed him when he had the opportunity, LaGuerta wouldn't have needed to die. Deb wouldn't have found him out, which again, if we're talking about sucker punch moments, is when Deb finds out about Dexter, right? But John Lithgow, creepy as anything in specific scenes as well, isn't it? He plays that role to a T. A couple of times it's like a family man and it's like, no, he couldn't possibly be a murderer. To the scene in the bathtub when you first see, I think, his first murder. It's just sinister.
We take this, one of the episodes where Kyle Butcher, I think Dexter charades around, is his new persona with John Lithgow, where he invites himself in for Thanksgiving dinner, I believe. Just that dinner scene, just that interaction with
yes,
the family,
yes.
It is so edge of your seat, but you're kind of wondering, you're not paying attention to Dexter, it's John Lithgow. We don't know a ton about him. We don't know the ending result of what this character's persona is. And we're just wondering, as Michael C. Hall is mentioning, where's your daughter? Or is your daughter watching TV in the other room? We find out there's locked doors. And then when that car pulls up with his son with the shattered windshield,
yeah,
just the tension between that of what's going to happen next, it's so good. And you really have an uncomfort on the unpredictable character development. So we don't know what this guy is going to do, and that's what makes him so good. He's like a ticking time bomb. He can go at any point. And that's what's really different about any other killer here, because there's an unpredictability to this character.
As you said, unpredictability is the best word I think you could use. I think he is the best character, best villain, and that makes that season the best season, including the extremely sad ending. I would put probably the ice truck killer as the next best one, because again, there was that cat and mouse game and it was quite a sadistic person. You mix it in with him dating Deb as well. So I think those two are probably, for me, the standout villains throughout it.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. But when we go into, I will have to give a shout out, because I think it's interesting. In season 6, we have the Doomsday Killers, and seeing Tom Hanks' son as a serial killer is like, I think for just that, just for who he is, gets an honorable mention. But I think you're right. The Ice Truck Killer, which they mentioned throughout the seasons, and John Lithgow in a memorable performance. It's funny because I didn't think I had to go revisit season 4 because I remember it so well, because it was so engulfing. But I did, because I wanted to go back and see it. I wanted to go back to see the John Lithgow performance. I wanted to go back to be, and you mentioned it, I forgot to an extent of that final shot because I was so engulfed in the story, like I was watching it for the first time again. And then it happens. I'm like, you got me again. This is, again, the hardest part to watch. But season 4, hands down, the best of Dexter, and John Lithgow, hands down, the best villain.
Do you know what it is about that final scene? Is because to set the scene, Dexter has sent off, or she's gone away. So Rita and the kids have gone away, gone to stay with her parents. He's murdered the ice truck killer. He's come back. He's due to fly out, and he's got a message from Rita saying, "Oh, I've forgotten something. I've come back. I'll meet you at home, or I'll see you there." And it was just that realization that she came back. She didn't go. What could that mean? And then, yeah, you see he's obviously, the Trinity Killer has obviously killed her in her own house. And that then sets up a lot of things for the future. And it was just that realization when he got that voice message. And that's what killed me, really did.
Well, I love how unpredictable the episode is, I mean, or the season is, because we even have that one oh shit shot where he shows up to the police station and the two just make eye contact. And,
John
Lithgow just looks at his name tag and says, "Hello, Dexter." So this, the whole season is just so unpredictable, and it doesn't follow the same exact formula as the rest of them, which makes this completely stand out. And one of those seasons I can literally watch over and over and over again and still have that same emotional reaction.
Actually, you make a really good point, which I'm going to come to. But the other thing I was going to say about Rita is, because when you're watching it, she's almost like, you think in your mind you build her up to be an untouchable character. And I think that's the thing. I got tricked into thinking, no, she's such a nice character that they're not going to do anything. And at some point, you've got to realize that Dexter can't have a normal life. Something's got to happen.
Well, they don't really give any hints to what's going to happen either, because she just plays the same character as this normal person that is just so sweet, and they don't really give any hints of what's going to happen or give it away. And I think that's what really kind of shocked everybody, because me personally, I remember thinking the first, this is going to be something that's going to grow Dexter in the next following seasons to maybe him getting out of being a serial killer, because I can see this sweet character really having his final effect to really change this man.
No, absolutely. Just a couple of honorary mentions, Cody and Esther, who you see grow up through the series. And Cody just loves Dexter so much, doesn't he? I mean, that's the thing. I feel so sorry for that kid, everything that must have happened to him. And obviously his son, Dexter's son, Harrison, who's just the cutest toddler ever. And then they change him in the final season. Oh, so yeah, going back to your point you made. Yeah, because throughout the course of the show, a lot of people find out who Dexter is, predominantly the main villain, but that does tend to lead to these confrontations. And I think I messaged you the other night when I was watching season 7, where it's almost like that scene in Heat where Pacino and De Niro meet at the diner. You've got Dexter meets Isaac Serco, and there's no element of threat. Even Isaac says, look, I'm not going to hurt you here. But they have a chat about love, like a normal relationship, because they both lost someone and how it's affected them. And I thought that was one of the best scenes in the show for me.
Yeah, I went back after you messaged and I rewatched that episode, and it is a great scene because it makes us the chemistry likable. It makes the outcome more at stake. So the bar scene is a brilliant scene, and we do get a couple nuggets here and there through relationships. I mean, I think we saw it in, season 3, where Miguel Prado has that relationship. So a lot of these relationships, especially with that one, build that chemistry where it's almost like two opposite ends coming and meeting in the middle on just a common understanding. And that was the biggest thing that stood out in season 3, was that common understanding, the relationship between Prado and Michael C. Hall, and that bar scene. So it's almost like a sigh of relief to give us a mental break from just the constant formula of what we've seen from previous seasons. So it was refreshing, and I think it was a brilliantly written scene.
Yeah, and one other character, if people are screaming at me, that features throughout, but wasn't in the pilot, so that's why I left him out. But you've got Desmond Harrington as Joseph Quinn. Bit of a funny character. Initially, you don't like him. Some points, he's a crooked cop. Then he goes after Dexter. Then he doesn't go after Dexter. He's then dating Deb. Then he's not dating Deb. Then he's dating Batista's sister. Then he's not. And then he's falling in love with Deb again. And I feel there's a good character there, but maybe not necessarily well crafted.
Well, and I think he kind of symbolizes the point, because every character here is damaged. Every character here has some sort of demon, and he kind of has it all. He has the want to be in a relationship, kind of like Dexter. He wants the professional respect. And if he doesn't get that, he's a little corrupt. If he doesn't get the love that he wants, he moves on to the next, until he meets Dev, of course. So there's a lot of damage to him that he acts as almost a symbol of all the characters in one. That's what I kind of took from it. He is corrupt, but he does it out of selfish wants and needs, just like we see from a lot of the characters here. We see just that overall messaging of human connection and acceptance. There's not one character in this show that doesn't want that or doesn't show an example of that at some point here.
So we've kind of gone through inadvertently all the villains, basically. Anyway, a shout out, I think you said Miguel Prado, Jimmy Schmitz, isn't it? Who isn't necessarily, you wouldn't look at him as being a villain, but ultimately does end up being so. Again, kind of love that connection he has with Dexter in it. I love that relationship they had. I was quite drawn in by that.
And great performances by him too, because that's the one that you really didn't see the outcome per se. But the performance really made us bought into where that character was going to go. And the relationship between the two, I think, was one of the best relationships when it comes to chemistry, when it comes to Dexter partnering. Because we usually follow the formula in Dexter. You go from one big killer to a relationship in the next season, then big killer relationship in the next one. And this one was, I think, one of the strongest relationships to it, because again, it was almost that contrast between the two, but being partnered with Dexter was the first seedling to really show how Dexter affects the next person.
Yeah. And it was a friend to Dexter.
Yeah.
It was the first, what you would call real friend. And for people listening, so Miguel Prado, I can't remember, what was he? He wasn't the DA, was he? No.
He was a district attorney, I think. Yeah.
And then ultimately, through revenge, because his brother gets killed, he doesn't know, by Dexter, and that was accident or mistaken identity, he starts actually wanting to be a killer like Dexter, or encourages Dexter. And anyway, it doesn't end well for him. So the finale, I'm going to hand over to you first. Tell me about your view on the finale.
Oh, this one's hard for me because it starts off really well. I mean, and especially there was a scene where I wasn't sure how it was going to end. It's when Dexter was handing off Harrison at the train station or the bus station, and we see those clouds start coming in. It's dark. And I'm like, oh, this is going to crescendo to something great, especially after seeing Deb just shot. Where is this going to go? But hell, we only have like 24 minutes left. How are they going to wrap this up? And unfortunately, this is where they jammed way too much stuff into one episode. They needed at least one more episode prior to this to really summarize this long 8-season series. Because, like I said earlier, there is no way that everybody got justice. And again, when it comes to season finales, 100% of the people aren't going to be satisfied. And we get that. And the first half, I thought, was really well done. But they didn't do justice. They took too long, or they didn't write it appropriately. They tried to check boxes. And again, they focused too much on what happens to Dexter without realizing we just spent 8 seasons with a fantastic cast of characters here, not just the one.
Yeah. As you said, we get Dexter's end story. We don't get anyone else's. So a very quick summary. So Dexter is trying to run away with someone called Hannah, who is another murderer slash friend of his. He's trying to run away with Harrison to Argentina. In the meantime, Deb has been shot and is in a coma. She ends up in a coma in the hospital. There's a storm coming, like you said. Story. Then ultimately, Dexter goes back because Deb ends up, she's in a vegetative state, isn't she? There's no coming back for her. He takes her from the hospital, dumps her over in the boat and rides into the storm. And then the very end is, you see he's in, I thought it was Canada or Alaska, but it's actually in Oregon. I think he ends up as a lumberjack, right?
Depending on, I'll go into kind of the season 9 in a second, but
So the only thing I was going to say, and the thing about the ending is absolutely those characters, like Quinn, ultimately, whether you liked him or not, he is devastated about Deb, what's happening. And all of a sudden, her body's then gone missing from the hospital. What's happened to him? He's not got necessarily a happy ending because he absolutely adored her. You've then got Masuka. They introduced the story about his daughter that he never knew he had. And that then felt pointless, introducing that, because there's nothing there. Oh, yeah. And then there's a whole storyline about Quinn going for the promotion, but then Batista being coerced by his superior into giving it to the other person. And it's like, well, again, that just felt like a waste of episode space then.
It really does, because it really adds a lot more stuff than it needed to. And this would have succeeded if they just focused on an actual conclusion with the characters on it. But again, after looking at season 9, if you want to call it, or the reboot, this one does look better after the rewatch of it. But at the same time, it's unsatisfying. It really is. It just feels like after dedicating 8 seasons, which is a lot for any series. It just feels wasted and just frivolous, especially when they try and end on a cliffhanger with Dexter, thinking, this is why everybody watched. So don't worry, our main character that you all loved, and probably the only character that you loved, is still alive, which wasn't the case. So I think they misread the room when it came to what really made this series special. And I think they kind of just fumbled it quite a bit.
I've read that the finale for the new series makes the first one look like a masterpiece. That's what I've read.
And I'm going to go into a Justin rant at some point when I talk about that. But
I've not seen the new series, so I'm happy for you. Like I said, I'm happy for you to spoil it for me. Yeah, let me just hear your overall thoughts then.
Yeah, I mean, so New Blood takes place, and you got it right, because nobody knew exactly where Dexter ended up. We see him as a lumberjack, and, you know, the first episode of New Blood, I thought it was in maybe Alaska. It was snowy, it was woodsy, but it ended up being a little town called Iron Lake, New York, which took me back a little bit. I had to look it up. With a population of 2,000 people, which doesn't seem like a lot of people to quench a serial killer's thirst and a lot of crime. So there he lays low, and he works at a sporting goods store selling rifles. And until Harrison, his son, finds him after his mother's death. So there, Harrison has tendencies too, which, shocker, New Blood. But here's the problem we have with this is where they check all the boxes of everything to do wrong. We have no likable characters. We have Harrison that really doesn't have any rapport with his father, that really needed probably a few seasons to build up. We have Dexter that's dating the sheriff, played by Julia Jones, and she has a daughter that Harrison is dating. So there's a lot of conflict here, and they're after a killer that acts as like the mayor of the town. And in a finale that this killer is not really threatening, they don't utilize the power this man has over the town. But the real big issue with this is nobody cares about anything that happens in this town. There's killings with 2,000 people, and then you have this new guy in town. Nobody questions him except for his girlfriend at the same point. But if you want a season to really piss you off more than the original did, this would be it. This one almost seemed like intentional to piss fans off, because we even get, and this was my final straw on this one, Dan, was the last couple of episodes. Now we get Batista hinted in this. We have a couple episodes where he communicates with Dexter, who now goes by Jim, on a lot of these murders that are happening. The last final episode, and this one will go down in my most hated finales in history, is Bishop calls Batista and says, we've got the Bayside Killer in my cell right now. We have all these things that match the Bayside Killer. Sends him a picture of Dexter and her on a couch hugging. And he goes, I will be there in the morning. Hold him. And keep in mind, Batista has a vengeance to find this killer who killed his ex-wife. We don't get that. We get no reunion between these two. We get nothing. He ends up just, that was his last scene, is I'll be right there, and there's nothing after that.
Oh.
So it's, again, one of those wasted things that, why even insert it if you're just going to dangle the carrot and then take it away? So there is a lot to this that was just sloppy. They just did it for ratings, I'm sure, and just to get the fan base. And Michael C. Hall, as painful as it is for me to say, he forgot who this character was, because he is completely unlikable during every single episode. He is artificial until the last episode, where he actually has the physical appearance and the verbal talent of a serial killer. And I didn't really care if he got arrested or what happened to him. It just needed to end, because there is no charm that was present in the previous seasons of Dexter. It almost felt like it was shot in one day, and it really didn't need to happen. It's like one of the worst rebooted series to come out and the worst season finales to ever air, in my opinion.
Wow. All I'm thinking is, I've got a Justin Ron on my show. I'm so happy. It is disappointing, because I think whilst you can look back and say the Dexter original run had a disappointing finale, I think it's probably even worse to come back and ruin the character, because you could say, right, they rushed the ending, but you had that previous 7.5 seasons, but it just feels, like you said, it sounds like it's lazy just trying to either kickstart the franchise off again, or if you're trying to give it redemption, then it feels like it's gone the complete other way.
Yeah, and at the end of this one, they do hint at the new blood, because the ending finale, I really don't want to spoil it for you, Dan, but there is no coming back for Dexter. But the character that, if they had the intent of continuing it, he's not interesting. I wouldn't care. If they came out with the new blood second season and it just featured Harrison, I wouldn't care and I wouldn't watch it. The best part of this was actually Carpenter, who comes back as our Harry, as a voice of conscience to Dexter, which she does a fantastic job, and I think she does a very well-placed, and I cared more about the ghost of Deb than I did any other character. So, you know what? Do a series about the ghost of Deb on who she haunts next, and I will watch that. But other than that, I hope they just let this one die.
Yeah, I watched the first 10 or 20 minutes of the new show just to see how it carried on, and it was good to see Jennifer Carpenter back as the passenger. Right, I want to wrap up. There's a couple of things I want to say. Firstly, I saw, according to the Dexter Wiki, I think this is before New Blood, Dexter has killed around 117 people. So that's a body count, right?
Did that break any records on TV shows?
Well, a lot of it, I think, had happened before the show. Because I think the key thing we missed out is he used to collect the slide, didn't he, of the blood of the victim as a trophy.
Well, you scared me now. You said that happened before the show. So is this like research for the show? Because that is creepy as hell.
You know what I mean? No, I think in his build up. The only other thing I wanted to say was I loved the music in this. The haunting strings, which you'll know what I mean. That is brilliant. And there's some incidental music, which I really like. I think it's something that I just wanted to call out on here, that I really enjoyed the music.
The music was unique, it was creepy, and it was simplistic, as it should be when it comes to just following a character. Reminds me of the old black and white cartoons where they're following the music with the character. It was spot on. You're 100% right.
And I want to ask you one final question. Well, it's kind of like a double question. Are you supposed to like him, or is he a hero or an anti-hero, or is he a villain? I guess, yeah. Well, how do you see him? Hero, anti-hero, or villain? Because some people, I've spoken to some people, they say, no, he's a hero. He's killing bad people. And he is, right? But in my view, I'm probably answering for you. You give me your answer.
I think I'm going to go really deep with it, and it'll probably piss people off. He represents everybody when it comes to how he outputs his emotion. There's not one characteristic with the Dexter character that nobody can relate to, even if you want to take out the murders. But he has anger, he has wants revenge, he wants redemption. This is not just one character that kills. This is somebody that really went through traumatic, and he's going through the phases and dealing with emotion. So is he a hero? He's an internal hero to a lot of people that's trying to work things out. Is the vengeance piece of it? He kills bad people. That's going to be open for interpretation. I'm not going to fall into that trap, but at the same time, he's not killing innocent people, but he did in some of these episodes. So I think the whole movie is about his journey through his emotional and his development, which he slips up. And that's where we get the redemption towards the end. So I think as a human growth, I think it's a journey with Dexter. So I don't think it's a matter of good, bad, or morality. I think it's just a journey, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to answer because, like you said, he did kill a couple of people, innocent people, accidentally. He ultimately oversaw the death of Doakes and LaGuerta, who were innocent, really. For me, what I said to somebody, though, was, okay, he's, in your words, he's taken out bad people. But if he wasn't in the police getting access to this information, or if he hadn't had his dad to mold him, he would be killing people. That's my view, is I think if there wasn't a bad person there, I think he would be killing a person and he wouldn't know whether they're good or not. And that's what I find hard to reconcile. It's so difficult because they make him a good character and Michael C. Hall plays him so well. So like I said, I'm glad I let you go first because it is a multi-layered. I don't think it's a simple answer.
It really isn't. And honestly, if you were to ask, killing anybody is bad, but to an extent, depending on some of the things that these people do, especially with the killing of youth, killing of children, absolutely. he did the right thing there.
Yeah.
But yeah. There's no right answer to this because there's so many different opinions. But internally, I think that's a tough one because, again, we're talking about a character and we're talking about the intent of what this character is to prove by the end of the eighth season.
Right. Look, I could talk to you for another half hour, 40 minutes, hour, and we probably might do after I stop recording. But thank you so much for coming on and talking about Dexter with me.
It's always a pleasure, especially when we're talking about serial killers, Dan. It brightens my day.
Before we go, please do shout out all your podcasts you're working on.
Yeah, I mean, you can check me out at the Movie Wire. You can follow me on the socials at Movie Wire Show and listen to wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also check out me and Antonio from the Cult Worthy Cinema podcast on our new show, Back to the Balcony. You can check that out. It's streaming on YouTube now.
Yeah, and if you're not, please do sign up to both of those. Give them a follow. Justin, all I can say again is thank you very much. We are going to have a chat about what we're going to do for the next couple of episodes on this, so I'm excited about where that's going to take us. I'm thinking, can we do something lighthearted? Because I actually meant to say, I actually had a dream about Dexter one night after about a marathon five episode binge watch. I had a dream about him coming at me, and it's like, yeah, maybe I need to watch something else briefly just to break up the serial killerness of this.
Yeah, we need to, because it's hard to get that Michael C. Hall smile out of your head when it's indented after eight seasons. So we'll do something a little lighter next time.
As always, I've been Casting Views. You're listening to me, so you know where to get me. If you want to drop a note to me, if you want to suggest a series or a show that Justin and I can take a look at the pilot and then have a look at overall, drop me a note at Casting Views across all social media or castingviewspod@gmail.com. And I'll be here next week for another episode of Casting Views.
If I want your opinion, I will give it to you. Come on, check what we've got, 'cause you need it. Don't make us get a sports game for sure.